Welcome to the Bitcoin Playbook, where we discuss proven strategies for using Bitcoin in your business. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guests today are Trey Sellers and John Gordon, who are joining me this week for another roundup episode. Today, we're going to discuss some of the recent headlines connected to Bitcoin and business, and we're going to get to that discussion right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with the Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. Welcome back to another roundup episode. Trey Sellers and John Gordon are joining me once again. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about a few headlines from this last week, including the Trumps getting into mining, GameStop getting interested in Bitcoin, and of course, Strategy and Metaplanet adding more to their balance sheet. So guys, welcome back.
Yeah, another eventful week or 2 weeks, I guess we could say, since the last time we spoke. There's never a dull moment in Bitcoin.
Very true.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, Josh. And there's always something happening, especially now it feels like we're hitting more of an acceleration phase and companies and individuals moving quickly to adopt Bitcoin.
Yeah, the headlines are incredible. The price is not keeping pace. And at some point, the two are going to meet together somehow. But I feel like one of the more interesting things, this is a headline that you shared with us earlier, but the Trumps are getting into Bitcoin mining. That may or may not be the most important thing that happened this week, but I feel like for mainstream interest, this is probably one of the more important headlines. So, Trey, you're the one that found this article. If you would, share with us a little bit about what you know so far about the Trumps and mining.
Yeah, it looks like they have launched a mining venture. It was kind of a merger with Hut 8. And they're calling it American Bitcoin, which I think speaks really well or is just in line with the way that they're approaching this entire Bitcoin posture that they have, which is American. America's going to lead. And having the Trumps involved in any of these types of businesses is obviously very impactful for people's perception of its legitimacy, right? So it continues to add credence to the fact that Bitcoin is here to stay, that there are important things that people need to be paying attention to when it comes to Bitcoin. And then them venturing into the mining ecosystem sends an important signal as to what miners in America can come to expect in terms of regulation, in terms of acceptance around the individual like power grids that they're trying to plug into, maybe the energy deals that are able to be made over the course of the next 4 years with this administration in power. I think, you know, any legitimacy that the Trump administration is placing on Bitcoin and on Bitcoin mining is hugely positive for us trying to establish ourselves, the Bitcoin ecosystem, as a major power player, not only in the US, but across the world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll echo that. And, you know, America, we have a lot of power and a lot of energy and a lot of wasted, stranded energy and untapped resources. So to see this play by the Trumps, but also surprised no one had taken that American Bitcoin name. I think that's really a strong play there. And friends actually with Matt Prusak, and I know him from Austin, he's taking over as CEO of the company. He has a lot of experience with Hut 8 and US Bitcoin Corp, as well as Ionic Digital, and helping scale that business. And he said they're starting out with 10 exahash and have a really clear cut vision to get to 50 exahash. So that's extremely bullish for the network, you know, sitting at around 800 exahash per second. We're really seeing that number continue to go up. 2021, I think the China mining ban, a pretty distant memory when we cut about 50% of the hash rate in Bitcoin, and now seeing that explode over 4 to 5x in the last few years and more mining coming online. I think it's a great sign for America and really clear signals for securing the Bitcoin network moving forward.
Yeah, and it's not just about the Bitcoin miners and the mining industry directly, who has kind of been in the game for a while. This also sends a major signal to energy producers in the United States that it's okay to start looking in the direction of Bitcoin mining to bring into their infrastructure. And, you know, Unchained works with a lot of Bitcoin miners, but we've also started getting calls from fairly large energy producers to say, hey, how can we bring Bitcoin mining into our mode of operations such that we can take advantage of some excess energy that might be being produced on specific sites. And they're starting to launch some pilot programs. We've seen some headlines about this over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, but that never really amounts to anything big. I think we might be on at a turning point for that, where, you know, now a, you know, major energy companies can look at Bitcoin mining in a much more serious way and say, hey, we're going to get support from the federal administration, which then tends to leak down into the more local administrations to bring Bitcoin in to help us more efficient, make us more efficient and bring in extra sources of revenue that were otherwise untapped.
Yeah. The stranded energy piece is one of the under-discussed elements of Bitcoin mining. I was just talking to someone last week who raised Bitcoin mining as a concern, who didn't know a lot about Bitcoin. I was talking with them about it and just told them basically we have more energy from renewable sources than anything else. And I, you know, personally, I don't care that much about that, but it's an important talking point. And I do care about being able to take excess energy that's otherwise being wasted and putting it towards something that I consider to be very valuable, which is securing the Bitcoin network. The other interesting thing about this whole deal is that Eric Trump's actually going to be the chief strategy officer, which I feel like is a really interesting thing and shows it's not just about money. It's more buy-in than just that. And I also think it's encouraging that, you know, previously the most talked about elements of the Trumps and crypto were World Liberty Financial and then the Trump meme coin, neither of which I think Bitcoiners were all that interested in. So I think it's cool to see them actually helping to secure the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, I think Eric Trump was on Fox Business, I think it was today, just talking about, you know, his journey to Bitcoin and talking about the censorship resistance nature of Bitcoin when you're facing potential problems using the traditional financial system, which the Trumps have some experience with. And Bitcoin mining is yet another way that you can bypass the traditional financial system in order to gain value that nobody else can control. Anybody who can plug in a miner anywhere around the world can earn Bitcoin without any kind of middleman there. And, you know, Russia has definitely started to figure this out. They're tapping into mineral resources or other types of resources that they have within their jurisdiction and creating a store of value asset or a financial asset that the U.S. does not control. That happens on a more micro level, too, for anybody mining Bitcoin in the U.S. And this streak of deglobalization, this streak of populism, this streak of people taking their financial future into their own hands is only enhanced by people starting to plug in miners, plug in ASICs, and earn some sats from the electricity that they're producing.
Absolutely. And that vertical integration you spoke to earlier, I think, can't be highly stated enough, because we're seeing a huge boon on the AI side and the need for energy and power for compute. And so we know what Bitcoin can do, both as a buyer of a first and last resort of energy. And so enabling even further scaling of operations and plugging that into that the energy generation demand sites is going to enable other use cases, like being able to use more AI by plugging in with Bitcoin. So
We wouldn't want the Studio Ghibli memes to slow down at all, right? Like Sam Altman needs to be plugging in some Bitcoin miners into his data center so that they can, supply the power with ample resources there. Actually, I don't think that was really a power generation issue. It was more of a GPU usage issue. But, you know, it's a similar type of concept.
That was a fun divergence last week, but it shows as quickly as some of the memes and tools hit, and they're really impressive to see. We're going to see that demand on the GPU side, as you mentioned, on the power side. And so being able to scale in tandem across the resources and tools that are being developed, we know Bitcoin's going to play a big part in that. So overall, seeing this movement here in America is really exciting.
So in other news, GameStop is now interested in Bitcoin. And at one point in time, people would have probably considered this a top signal. So maybe we can discuss a little bit about whether or not it potentially could be and why this could be a good move for GameStop, as well as I'd be curious to know, I think the GameStop mania was pre-Bitcoin for me, which is not that relevant. But, you know, I wasn't following. I was trying to stay away from crypto back in the day because it seemed like it was kind of scammy and people were just in it for the dollars. And that's why I stayed away from Bitcoin. Same thing with GameStop. But did either of you guys get in on the GameStop mania back in, I think, 2021?
I had so much FOMO during that time. I really wanted to, you know, it's like you see and hear all these plebs making millions of dollars, apparently. Although, I don't know, it's so hard to really understand what's going on and who's just blowing smoke out there versus who is actually on the right side of that trade. But it captured headlines. I remember this time, right? It captured headlines day in and day out for months on end. And then there was documentaries made about it on Netflix, which was actually, I can't remember the name of that documentary. I don't know if y'all recall it, but
there's a movie recently that came out too, right?
Maybe I missed it, but, you know, it's just a fascinating story. And wouldn't it be so exciting and interesting if we run that back yet again, but with a slightly different catalyst here that has a little more staying power? The interesting thing about the GameStop story, in my opinion, back then was that, you know, you have these individual people who basically memed this dead end stock through the roof, like, you know, multiples and multiples of returns over a very short period of time. But ultimately, Wall Street had its comeuppance, right? Like they issued a ton of stock into this rip-roaring rally and diluted the shareholders of that. And they flipped circuit breakers. Like, they pulled out all the stops to, on the one hand, take advantage of this massive run-up when it comes down to, you know, the shareholders and the management team there. Makes all the sense in the world that they would issue a whole bunch of equity into that type of rally. But then, you know, just managing that situation in a way that wasn't going to bankrupt the hedge funds and the market makers and the people who were kind of on the other side of that trade and in a short position, I think it educated a lot of those people who were paying attention at the time as to what length people will go to in order to protect their interests. And surprise, surprise, Bitcoin doesn't have a breaker switch. Yep. And it doesn't have any ability to create more supply to tap into a massive increase in demand. So putting these two different dynamics together in the form of this GameStop meme stonk is going to be really, really fun to watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think turning off the buy button on Robinhood when they were really ripping there in 2021 was, I think, a big wake-up call to people buying the stock and just interacting in the legacy stock market in general. I mean, it's still operating on the traditional hours. It's not a 24/7 market as much as, yeah, there's futures here and there available, but Bitcoin is traded 24/7, 365, and being used all around the world with access. So I think this GameStop announcement and seeing the Bitcoin and the meme stonks come together. I mean, I didn't really, that was when I was going down my Bitcoin rabbit hole too, but didn't get in and not trading against some of the shorts there. But I think it showed what the flood of money did into the system and just distorting value of certain stocks. And if you look at it on paper, yeah, it shouldn't be worth that much. These are legacy brick and mortar businesses that are, as we've seen in other industries too, going out of business, but now all of a sudden catching a ton of steam in retail. So the fact that they did dilute, they did issue more paper, that can't happen in Bitcoin, as you said very well, Trey. And so,
well, you make such a good point about just the decentralization of the trading of Bitcoin relative to the stock market, right? Like, stocks typically only trade on one or maybe two exchanges in the United States, the NYSE or the NASDAQ or something like that, right? And but Bitcoin is traded across the world on thousands of different exchanges. There's a thousand different ways that you can buy and sell Bitcoin. And so you don't have this like natural centralization of being able to shut down a market. If you shut down trading in the US, it's just going to, you know, continue on as if nothing happened. Maybe it makes the price go up actually, because now all of a sudden it's harder to get your hands on some Bitcoin if you want to get some. Yep. So that's just such an interesting thing that Bitcoin benefits from that GameStop doesn't, and it has nothing to do with the inherent nature of Bitcoin versus GameStop. It's really just about the decentralized aspect of the way that it trades that is meaningfully different in the outcomes that you can expect from these types of episodes.
Yeah. So yeah. The people that are talking about or at least thinking about this as a top signal for Bitcoin, first of all, we've already fallen from 100, 800, 9,000 down to where we are today, which is lower mid 80s. But I think this is a great time, if you ever have those conversations with people, to help people to see that a company like GameStop that probably shouldn't exist or probably doesn't have much of a future, like this is the way that they continue on. Now, you can have your opinion whether or not you think they should continue. Do they have a role in the marketplace? But whatever they do with the Bitcoin on their balance sheet, it will help them to continue on into whatever new iteration of a company they want to become. So I think it's just a really powerful way to talk about what Bitcoin can do for any business and to some degree an individual's balance sheet as well. Although, like we talked about last time, public companies have the ability to get more Bitcoin in more creative ways than the average individual.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how GameStop actually gets that Bitcoin, because right now they've approved the buying of Bitcoin with the $4.5 billion in cash reserves they have on hand, but they're also issuing the convertible debt. I think it was $1.5 billion almost, and we'll see how subscribed that is. But they're saying, hey, taking the strategy playbook, why not get free money, essentially 0%, yep, and buy Bitcoin with that versus using our hard-earned cash or their stonk-earned cash that's sitting on their balance sheet and to buy the Bitcoin. So, you know, I think the amount that's deployed and how that continues to flow for a company that I think is 10x the size that Strategy, MicroStrategy was the time that they started their buying Bitcoin and accumulating, will definitely be really interesting to play out and see if more entrepreneurs and leaders such as the Ryan Cohns of the world see this as a really viable option to gain attention, gain traction with investors and start dipping their toes into Bitcoin.
Yeah, Josh, but you're mentioning that, you know, should they exist or should they not? I mean, isn't the whole point of a business to figure out how to make returns for their shareholders and grow the business? So who cares like what that tactic is that they're taking? They're not really fundamentally changing the value proposition of the business itself. They're just bringing on a new strategy for helping their balance sheet carry a good amount of the load. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that Wall Street analysts need to start figuring out how to value companies based off of a balance sheet that can actually actively contribute to the growth of the company, as opposed to just being something that's there to just finance the operations, and the P&L side is what drives growth. Well, GameStop is going to test this because this is a true operating business that's been in the doldrums that shows like just barely a little bit of signs of life. And maybe they're able to bring this balance sheet asset that can help give them new life and bring more eyeballs to the company and help them grow the actual revenue producing side of the business.
Yeah, no, I have no issue with GameStop or any other company existing. But for those companies that feel like they're kind of getting to the end of their current life cycle, Bitcoin offers a way, at least offers additional time to figure out what that next phase is like. I feel like we've seen this with Strategy. The whole reason Michael Saylor adopted Bitcoin is because there wasn't that much of a future for MicroStrategy at the time.
It's not a magic bullet, especially in the short term, though, right? Yeah. Like, what if we are entering a bear market here that lasts for the next 18 months and the price goes from 85,000, where it's at right now, down to 40,000 or less than that? And that's right after GameStop has, you know, made this purchase of it $5 billion with their cash reserves and this convertible debt. I mean, maybe it accelerates their demise just because they're not necessarily as well equipped as Strategy is, of course, to weather that type of intermediate downturn. So, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. But you do need some medium range staying power in order to make this Bitcoin strategy work, unless you time it really well.
Yeah, for sure. And Saylor did catch a good bit of upside, which was great for him. He also rode it through a really difficult bear market.
Yeah, he had a couple of years of like proving that that there was something there before he entered into that bear market. And then there was like this test of, oh, of course he's going to capitulate. He's going to have to sell all this stuff. People calling for like margin calls on the debt that he had outstanding, which we all know is not actually there in a direct line of sight, but it's a different environment now. And if we are, you know, entering into a prolonged area where Bitcoin just doesn't go up, and maybe goes down for the short term, then it's going to put a lot of pressure on GameStop and the management there and the shareholders and the board and that kind of thing. So hopefully that's not the case, right? Hopefully this is still just a little bull market pullback and we end up going to 200,000 or more in the next 12 months. We'll see.
Have you guys thought about whether or not you should add GameStop to your personal holdings? Or is that just kind of, are you kind of in the wait and see pattern to see if they'll actually follow through?
Yeah, I think we'll wait and see, not adding at this point. I mean, mostly just in Bitcoin, really. I think even stocks in general, you know, they're pretty overinflated from a PE perspective. And while there's still opportunity there, we'll see. And I think that to your point, Trey, too, on the leverage side, in case of weathering a downturn, it's important to consider how the companies or as an individual, you know, you're acquiring Bitcoin. And so acquiring it for cash and, you know, as Odell says, staying humble, stacking sats, you know, as an individual too, not wanting to, you know, not taking on too much leverage or extending yourself, those bear markets, the downturns can be an opportunity to continue to study Bitcoin, learn more, increase your conviction, because those Bitcoin's such a unique asset that people in Bitcoiners tend to get excited when the price goes down, because that means you can stack a bit more sats for the value you're putting away in longer term savings. But absolutely being able to weather kind of short term volatility in dollar terms, while we know Bitcoin itself is extremely stable and we know what the monetary policy and issuance is of Bitcoin, you know, it's important as we are in this transition period and dollars obviously still being the primary unit of account and measure stick of value. But I think as that shifts into Bitcoin, some of the volatility that comes from money printing and as that flows into Bitcoin won't be there as much. And as we know now, typically we'd seen 12 to 18 months following a halving is when you see, have seen the Bitcoin bull run, but at almost 95% issuance of Bitcoin at this point, maybe we see less of an impact of the block subsidy. I mean, Strategy itself has been buying as much as the 900 Bitcoin a day itself over the last year. And so then that gets into more talks on just, hey, how are you custodying? How can we also ensure that there's not such an influx of paper Bitcoin on the market that we've also seen happen and really lead into the last bear market that we had? So yep. Great to see more public companies taking this move, and we'll continue to track it.
Sounds like they'll be added into ONB, the ETF that we talked about a couple of weeks ago that has is comprised of all of these companies, these public companies that own what is it, at least $1,000 Bitcoin in their Bitcoin treasury. Mm-hmm. So hey, yeah, we'll be able to see the diversity of that ETF continue to widen. That'll be fun to watch.
Indeed. If you are hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. So Trey, I'm going to kick this one over to you, but the recent FDIC rule change that allows banks to engage in Bitcoin-related activities without prior approval, was this something, it's not something that I've been tracking that closely, is this something that was a surprise, or have we been waiting on this for a while?
I don't think it's necessarily a surprise, but it's yet another headwind that's taken away from the banks and traditional financial institutions to be a little bit more proactive in their adoption of Bitcoin and, you know, starting to craft their strategy. They no longer have to seek prior approval, which takes a lot of time and a lot of people working on documentation that they're submitting to some bureaucrats in Washington in order to get the blessing of this agency, which has a lot of power over them, in order to start to dabble and play and pilot in some of the things that make sense for banks to provide. You know, I think originally that's going to be in the realm of custody. You know, I'd like to see banks start providing the ability for people to hold Bitcoin right next to their checking account, right? It's like you've got your dollars here and your Bitcoin, and you can seamlessly go back and forth to either one of them. They're probably not going to let you withdraw that Bitcoin, at least not yet, but at least getting the financial exposure to it is a really good first step. And then I think we're going to start seeing them venture into some of the credit related products that is why they're in business, right? Like, banks exist to provide credit and lending, and having Bitcoin as part of that infrastructure is going to be really, really interesting and important. And then the final thing that I think we will hopefully start to see a lot more of is, you know, traditionally speaking, you go to get a mortgage as a Bitcoiner or a person with a large amount of your wealth in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And the banks look at that and they apply a big zero to its value because they don't understand it and they don't have the proper regulatory structure around it and all that. This allows, you know, this evolution of the regulatory environment allows for them to take a better approach to looking at people's asset, their net worth, their personal balance sheet, and saying, okay, here are some assets that we can potentially tap into that we can take into consideration as part of a mortgage application or a personal loan application or what have you.
Yeah. So there was one time, I'm trying to remember, what I was sending a wire at one point through my bank, which every time I do that, anytime I have to go into the bank and do anything, it's so frustrating to me. It makes me very thankful for Bitcoin. And it makes me look forward to the day when I can do everything on Bitcoin. But I was asking the person, someone who came in from the bank, I was asking him if they would ever, you know, take into account Bitcoin when it came to banking activities. And the face that he looked at me with was just, he had so much pity for me because he couldn't believe that someone would ask a question like that. And, you know, I kind of honestly felt the same way for him. And at that point in time, I knew that one of us was very wrong about the future. I don't think it's me. Of course, he doesn't think it's him. But it's just, you know, there are so many changes that are happening. It's going to really change how banking's done. It may not seem like it across, you know, from year to year, but in the coming couple of decades, there's going to be a lot of changes that happen. And I'm excited to see those changes. John, I don't know if you have any thoughts about the FDIC side of things.
Yeah, I think it's great to see the regulatory environment moving alongside and recognizing Bitcoin as it is, which at this point is an asset, but eventually, and where we see it as peer-to-peer cash and purely money, I think with Operation Choke Point 2.0, everything that has come out over the last administration's approach to banking with Bitcoin, it was incredibly antagonistic, and it was very risky and difficult to try to launch new products and for traditional banks to get into Bitcoin and learn the rails and how do we custody and how do we interact and transact in a traditionally slower moving industry. So seeing this here, definitely opening up more of the floodgates. We'll see how fast those get filled. And as these institutions move, we know it's going to take some time and research and due diligence on their end. But I think the more institutions now in TradFi that's getting into Bitcoin, the more it'll continue to seep into day-to-day products that everybody's using with their banks. Not everybody wants to switch all the time, but I think it also is an important call to the industry and people building in Bitcoin that this is a really golden opportunity to innovate, bring new products to market with Bitcoin, certainly throughout this administration, and we'll see, you know, for the next 4 years and hopefully beyond. Some of the rule changes that come in aren't only three-letter agency changes or executive orders, but also get set in stone through Congress and more recognizing of the right to self-custody Bitcoin and to transact with Bitcoin, which I think we're seeing coming. Good momentum on that side too. I think that also will take more time, but with Cynthia Lummis and the Bitcoin Act, Financial Freedom Act also that's getting pushed, we'll see how that gets set in stone. But certainly exciting to see the FDIC shift a bit. And we saw the shortcomings of the FDIC during the Silicon Valley Bank and banking crisis in March of 2023, when even what FDIC was holding would only cover what one bank failure. And we have many, many banks that have not such great balance sheets at this point. So that transition over to Bitcoin, maybe strengthening those, limiting some of the banking failures, runs on banks, which we know can happen really, really quickly in a digital age. So it's been just about 2 years since that moment. But I think things can change quickly.
Yeah, and just as an interesting anecdote relative to banking, I had some outreach to me recently about a like local or regional bank that is interested in having a conversation now that things have started to thaw, and they are starting to think about what that strategy is going to look like, and you know, even if it's just having a connection to some of the Bitcoin companies in the space so that as they're getting questions, they can refer them elsewhere and just say, hey, here's maybe a partner that we work with who can help you on the Bitcoin front while we gear up to start offering these services directly, I think is an interesting development.
So in Bitcoin tangential news, let's say MasterCard is going to start using some sort of, I think, proprietary blockchain for some transactions. This news just broke today, so I don't know all that much about it, but I thought it might be an interesting time to discuss permissioned rails versus permissionless rails. And they're going to use something called the multi-token network. And I wasn't able to figure out much about it, or if they're using, you know, if it's really just their own technology or for some other crypto rails. But I think it might be interesting to talk a little bit about why Bitcoin is a better alternative to permission pathways for money. So it may or may not be connected to MasterCard, but maybe a good way to kick this off is, do you think that in the future, MasterCard, Visa, or whatever the equivalent is in the future, will they run off of something like the Lightning Network? Or do you think that larger companies like that will always have their own rails?
I just don't understand the point of this, right? If you're in a permission network, then why do you need a blockchain? It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, if we're talking about MasterCard or we're talking about Visa, we're talking about a network of credit that provides credit to the end user, that is connecting, you know, payment rails across all of the different nodes that are within their own network. And those nodes need to communicate in a very quick way, but within a trusted permissioned environment where you don't need to add the extra friction of this like blockchain thing. Like, to me, when I hear that, what I imagine is the case is that you've got a bunch of like McKinsey or Deloitte consultants sitting in a room with these MasterCard executives telling them blockchain is the future and you can do this with blockchain, and the executives eat it up. Yeah. Okay. We're going to like hop on this bandwagon because they don't know any better. This is like a blast from the 2016 past or whatever. And well, it's never going to work. There's a reason that it hasn't worked up to this point. I just really don't understand this.
Yeah. I thought we'd been here, done that already in previous years, and recognizing that blockchains are not more efficient than just having your own central server. So there isn't really a purpose to introducing it. And even with all the other, altcoins and other cryptocurrencies that are out there as well, they're essentially centralized too. So Bitcoin, and really the best use of a blockchain, is for a decentralized ledger that nobody controls and that needs to be synced up every, in Bitcoin's case, 10 minutes. And that isn't really needed when you have already a company and internal messaging, whether and other systems that are permissioned, whether it's the Swift network or the Visa or MasterCard. And they have such, they have built-in costs already. And there's a reason why they're charging 2 to 3%, if not more, for each transaction, because there's a lot of overhead that it takes to, run that system. And so with Bitcoin being a non-permissioned and permissionless system, anybody can tap in, anybody can run a node for even a couple $100, even less now, on some hosted services where you're still controlling the keys, and be a part of the network, open up a channel to other businesses that you're interacting with on the Lightning Network, and be able to have the throughput and even higher, more than 1 million transactions per second, right? More than the throughput even Visa or MasterCard has, and at a fraction of the cost. So I think as the Lightning Network is a layer two, and eCash and other systems that are built on Bitcoin, but in a permissionless way that you can always unilaterally exit those contracts, those smart contracts and those relationships, and get your money out, is something that is also unique to Bitcoin and should also be scrutinized in any other layer twos or blockchains that other companies are introducing into the market, because ultimately it's going to come with many caveats and then also privacy concerns too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the point of the MasterCard network is to provide these like credit wheels so that commerce can happen very fluently and very quickly without the need of actually moving the money, right? Because you're not moving money, you're moving credit. You're just updating ledgers on either side, and the network or the nodes within there all trust one another. So you can just do some very quick tallying internally. And then when you do actually need to move money, then you can move the underlying actual money. The reason that the rails in the financial system are so slow and expensive is because they're so entrenched and are built on legacy infrastructure that just kind of doesn't allow for the money to move faster and be reconciled in a way. But upending that whole infrastructure with a new blockchain type thing takes just as much overhead than just, improving the current system that you have and replacing it with something that just uses traditional like database tech in order to move this money. So if you're comparing, do we just improve the system that we have and make it faster versus upending the whole thing with blockchain technology that doesn't really provide any benefit, you're just going to opt for the thing that makes more sense, which is improving on what you've got. And then things will start getting faster. You're not going to get any faster by introducing blockchain into the mix there. If these people want to start issuing credit that is denominated in Bitcoin, then that makes a lot of sense, right? You're going to like facilitate more transactions that are denominated in Bitcoin and that settle with Bitcoin. And at that point, you'll be moving Bitcoin over those rails in order to settle that credit that's been created. So that's how I see it kind of evolving over the next 10 to 20 years. It's not going to be this permissioned thing that these McKinsey and Deloitte people have dreamt up after having not understood how all this stuff works.
A few weeks ago, I was talking with someone who believed that every single thing in the future would be on a blockchain. So, Amazon would run on a blockchain. All these companies would run on a blockchain. Bitcoin is a blockchain. And his thing was, what's the next thing? What's the thing that's going to unite all the blockchains? And it's like people almost assume that the blockchain is the future because they've heard that they don't think through what that would look like. It's just it's a unnatural world that practically will never exist. I appreciate your thoughts on these. We're running out of time here. Unsurprisingly, Metaplanet and Strategy have purchased more Bitcoin. Maybe we can talk about Bitcoin yield in the future as a KPI. I think it might be interesting to talk about whether or not that's going to be kind of a standard KPI in the future for all companies. But the last thing I wanted to briefly touch on before we give any final thoughts is Bitcoin rewards. Last week's episode on the podcast was with Oliver Stamatoski from Beyond the Checkout. He is focused on Bitcoin rewards for physical goods. He'd love to see everything in stores have include Bitcoin rewards. I think it's an interesting way to get more people aware of Bitcoin and get people their first sats. They also have a great way to help people take custody sooner rather than later. I know there's some other great rewards companies, and I have some friends who've gotten their first Bitcoin from these reward companies. But I want to kind of open up the brief conversation about whether or not that is a key thing to get more people involved in the future. And if not, what is going to be the catalyst to get more people interested in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I think it's great to see more tools being built out to get people potentially their first sats via Bitcoin rewards. And as you're spending and moving throughout your day, being able to earn Bitcoin sats back is an awesome tool that businesses can consider when trying to reach a Bitcoin consumer, but also educate their current customers on, hey, what is Bitcoin and how do I get some, and increase your loyalty at the end of the day, right? You can increase your average order value. You can have more loyalty and perks, VIP tiers that you're implementing in your business. And I've helped a few businesses integrate Bitcoin rewards via Oshi. So Mod Bikes is one, an e-bike shop, as well as Tropical Oasis and others, doctors I've worked with as well, considering saying, how can I incentivize and offer something else that's different from my competition? And Bitcoin certainly offers that. And because of the ability to send micro payments and have that instant settlement, there's a lot of flexibility that you can have as a business owner. So I'd love to see what Beyond the Checkout is doing. We're seeing this in healthcare as well with a company called NeHowdy from a prescription drug perspective and getting rebates and sats back via rewards. So I think we're going to keep seeing more and more tools and use cases that Bitcoin rewards fits into.
How easy is it to sell a business owner on Bitcoin rewards as part of their ecosystem? Does it have to replace other rewards that they're doing? Does it enhance the rewards that they're doing? Like, what does that actually look like?
Yeah, it depends on the business. I'd say for those that are more, e-commerce and product based, they may or may not already have a loyalty and rewards program they're using. But generally what you see with, say, Starbucks stars or miles even, these get devalued too. And then you can only use it at this one store, this one place. So being able to tap into the Bitcoin network more broadly by offering Bitcoin rewards that over time we do see appreciate, and maybe you are now able to buy directly from that merchant in Bitcoin with the rewards you earned. It can happen kind of stepwise. It's something I bring up to all my clients. It's not implemented all the time, but I think for the use cases where maybe they don't have a tool already and they're saying, let's just jump right into Bitcoin rewards because we've never gotten to a rewards and loyalty program yet for a more orange-pilled business owner, it's really aligned. Or it can be an add-on to what they're already doing and to tap into a different consumer base. So it's always part of the conversation, I think, from a Bitcoin strategy perspective, and can still be used and I think tailored more towards the service type industry versus mm-hmm. just products where it does fit in pretty quickly and naturally.
Yeah, I know that the credit cards that were giving rewards back, even like BlockFi had a popular rewards card, and BlockFi no longer exists because they were doing a whole lot of other shady stuff that ended in their demise. But, you know, I remember people saying that they really loved that credit card, and I never used it. I'm excited to try out the Fold credit card whenever it's available. My personal favorite Bitcoin rewards piece is River's 3.8% that I earn on my cash by just keeping it there. I don't keep a whole lot of cash on hand, but when I do, I keep it there so that I am able to just earn some sats passively. It's a nice form of dollar cost averaging with money that I need to be saving up anyway and keeping in cash for, you know, various expenses that might be coming up in the near term. So that's my favorite Bitcoin rewards app right now.
And for anyone considering Bitcoin rewards, NeHowdy, which John just talked about, they have a feature on their website where you can see how much, if you saved a certain amount or got sats back on a certain amount of your prescription in the past, what that would be worth today. And it's pretty striking when you realize what your sats earned 5 years ago, what they could be worth today. So that might be something if you're curious about trying it out, and if you want to kind of see what some of those numbers would look like. And of course, if you are interested, then you can reach out to John, and he can get you connected with the right person or help you out himself. But maybe John, if you would give your final thoughts, pitch where people can go to find out about you, and then Trey, if you would as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You can learn more about my work, satoshihealth.com, how I'm helping businesses integrate a Bitcoin strategy, and have an exciting event upcoming in Austin that I would love to plug. It's a Run for HAL, raising funds for ALS research, the ALS network, and it's going to be a part of the broader Spring into Bitcoin event. And actually with that event, we do have Bitcoin rewards if you're buying tickets via Zaprite. So we have that tooling integrated, which is a lot of fun. And we're going to have some live music, showcase a Bitcoin marketplace with other businesses accepting Bitcoin and potentially offering Bitcoin rewards too. So if you're around the Austin, Texas area, it'll be in Hippo Social Club on April 12th. So really excited for that event and just showcase and help people. Maybe that's their first introduction into Bitcoin, to get a sense of the community, the different tools and that we're building. So, yeah, thanks and hope to see you all down there.
Cool. Yeah. Enjoy the conversation as always. You can find me on X at @TS_HODL and check out my newsletter on financial independence and Bitcoin and merging those two. It's FireBTC at substack.com. Pardon the tongue twister there. And go check out my personal website as well. I've got some good Bitcoin resources that are listed there, TreySellers.com.
Awesome. Thank you guys for your time. Talk in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me, John, or Trey, you can find those links down in the show notes. And if there's something you'd like to hear us discuss on a future episode, please let us know. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading.